Well, it's good to see everybody this morning. If you want to take your Bible and open to the book of 1 John, that's where we're going to study from this morning. Maybe just to give you kind of an idea of what we're going to do through the week. This morning's lessons are somewhat random. We're going to look at 1 John this morning, and then the next sermon, it's something different. And then starting tonight and going through the rest of the week, we're going to do a series of studies through the book of Matthew. And so the majority of what we're going to be talking about will be Matthew. But like I said, this morning we're going to talk about 1 John and the way that John addresses the people that he's writing to. John's simple. It's a simple letter. If anyone ever studies New Testament Greek, one of the first things that you read is 1 John because the language is so very simple. But I've studied 1 John for years and years and years. 20 years ago, I was in a preacher training class, and the minister there asked me to do some expository studies out of a book of the New Testament, and I picked 1 John because it was short, and so I started working on it, and it was complicated. It was difficult for me. I couldn't come up with anything, and I have over the years come back to it and worked on it from time to time, and it's still been a difficult book for me. It's simple, but it's challenging. I think I've got a better grasp on it than I had 20 years ago. I'm not sure that I've got a great grasp on it, but I think I've got a better grasp on it. And maybe one of the most elementary, maybe one of the most basic things that we can notice about John's letter is the way that he addresses the people that he's writing to. Because he uses two different terms. He uses two different phrases. Sometimes he will say, "My little children." And sometimes he will say, "Beloved." And I've listed them, and I don't know how you do your Bible studies, but what I sometimes do is I'll take things like those two introductions or those two addresses, and I'll list them, and then I'll list the passages where those are found, and I'll try to look at the thing that he says in the context of "beloved," or the thing that he says in context of "my little children," and I'll try to see, why would he say "my little children" here rather than "beloved"? Is there something special about what he's saying that fits one over the other? And I'll tell you, I've studied and I've thought about it and I've thought about it and I've wrestled with it, and I've not found a commentary that really talks about it. And I don't think there is a reason other than for variety. Sometimes we say the same thing, we just like to say it differently for variety. It's not exactly every other time, but it works out almost every other time. He just kind of switches back and forth. "My little children, beloved." I think it's just for variety. But what I see when we look at the things that John mentions is that these are the things that parents, good parents, tell their children. These are the things that I think my kids are here, and so maybe they'll tattle on me. But I think these are the things that I tell them. I think these are the things that my parents told me. And so let's just think about a few things that good parents tell their children, things that John's mentioning here. John, of course, is not the parent, but he is an older man. He seems to be an older man. In his other letter, he talks about himself being the elder to the elect lady, or the elder to my beloved Gaius. And so it's almost as an older Christian, and he's writing to these younger Christians, and maybe he's mentored them, maybe he's studied with them and taught them, perhaps he's even baptized some of them. So here's an older man, he's writing to these younger disciples, younger Christians, and so what does he tell them? Well, he says to them, and what I say to my children, maybe what good parents say to their children is, he says, I tell them, be careful. I tell my children, be careful. Do your parents ever tell you to be careful? You go outside to play, and what do they say? As you're running out the door, and the door's slamming behind you, what did your parents say? Be careful! Don't run in the street! Be careful! When my kids were little, my girls were little, my mother and father-in-law at the time, she was a school teacher, and she brought a video home. She wanted us to show to our children, so we came over to their house, and so she showed us this video, and it was about stranger danger. Now, when I was a kid, Mom and Dad just said, don't talk to strangers. Just don't talk to strangers. Don't take candy from strangers. The guy in the paneled van. Don't talk to the guy in the paneled van. I've mentioned that every time that I've preached a sermon, I've mentioned that, and every time that I've preached a sermon, I've drove up in a minivan. My name's Ray, by the way, so I hope I'm not a stranger. But anyway, you know, be careful. That's what we tell our children. We want them to be careful. Play safe. Be careful. It's not just not talking to strangers, but be careful how you play. Are you climbing too high in that tree? Moms always say, you're climbing too high. And dad says, you can go a little bit higher than that, but be careful. Look at what John has to say. Turn with me, if you will, to the book of 1 John. 1 John chapter 3. Now, there are a couple passages that I want to look at here as we go through John. But notice what he says here. This is 1 John, the third chapter, and verse 7. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 7. Now, notice the way that he begins the verse. Little children. So there's that term of address. Little children. Make sure no one deceives you. The one who practices righteousness is righteous just as he is righteous. So he uses that term of address, my little children. And then the very first thing that he says is, be careful. Be careful. Or how about over in chapter 4 in verse 1? He says, beloved. There's the other term. My little children, beloved. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. Now, I just take a moment and step aside from what we're discussing here and maybe give you just kind of a broad picture of what's happening in 1 John. If you read through it, you're going to notice that John talks about the same subjects, but he just keeps coming back and talking about them. He'll talk about love. Love is one of those things that he talks about quite often. He'll talk about love from time to time, but then he'll get off of the subject of love and he'll talk about something else. He'll talk about the one who confesses that Christ has come in the flesh, and then he'll ramble about something else for a little while, and then he'll come back and he'll start talking about love again. And so he just kind of works in these cycles, works in these patterns. I read one commentary who said that that John was an old man at this time, and the tendency with old men is to ramble. And so, you know, and so that's why you find this kind of cyclical pattern in 1 John. I don't think that's what's happening. I think what's happening is you have three subjects that John is addressing. He'll talk about brotherly love. He talks about personal holiness, or at least this is the way that I phrase it. He talks about brotherly love, personal holiness, and doctrinal soundness. And he talks about all three of these in cycles. But what I think John is doing is, what he's saying is, listen, just like you can't have the Father if you don't have the Son, and you can't have the Son if you don't have the Spirit, they all go together. You can't have one without the others. If you have one, then you have all. I think what John's saying is, listen, you are not doctrinally sound if you do not love the brethren. If you don't love the brotherhood, if you don't love your fellow Christians, God's children, if you don't love them, then you're not personally holy. You cannot be personally holy if you're also not doctrinally sound. You cannot be doctrinally sound if you don't love, or you can't truly be loving if you're not personally holy, if you're not doctrinally sound. All of these fit together. They all go together. And so John's warning us here, be careful of these false spirits, or be careful of these false teachers. We know that they're out there. Be careful of them. Watch for them. And then notice the way that he finishes the entire letter. The very last verse. The very last verse. 1 John chapter 5 and verse 21. He just kind of randomly drops this at the very end. And again, this is one of those places where verse 21, it doesn't seem to have anything to do with what's happened before, other than it's just part of that threefold aspect of Christianity. Personal holiness, doctrinal soundness, and brotherly love. And he drops this at the very end. He says, little children, guard yourselves from idols. Be careful. That's what a good parent tells their children. Be careful. Be careful. When you go out in that big old world, be careful. And that's what John's saying to his disciples. Listen, there's a lot of dangers out there and you need to watch. Be careful. What does a good parent tell their children? Well, they say, remember who you are. Remember who you are. I asked Dad about this because I've told this before. I've told the kids this. And I had to verify before I came and preached here where Dad attends. I had to verify that I hadn't just made this up in my mind or dreamed this one day. But I remember when I was a kid, I must have come home from school. I was upset. Maybe somebody picked on me or bullied me a little bit. And so I was upset. I come home and I was telling Dad about it. And so Dad tells me about when he was a kid and he came home from school and there was some girl there making fun of him. Now I did give Dad a heads up that I was going to tell this story. So if he didn't want me to say it, he could have said something. So I think it's okay. But he'd come home and he told his dad that this little girl at school was making fun of him, and she kept going on about where'd you get those big ears? Now I know everybody's going to look. Where'd you get those big ears? Where'd you get those big ears? And Grandpa told my dad. He said, when you go back to school, this is what you tell her. When you go back to school, and she said, where'd she get those big ears? You know what you tell her? You say, my dad gave them to me. You know what? And that's what I tell my kids. I said, remember who you are. You're my kid. You're my child. You go with me. It doesn't matter what they say. You're with me. You're my boy. You're my girl. And I'm happy with you. Look at what John says. Back in chapter 3 once again. This is 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3. John says, now, the phrase is found in verse 2, beloved. There's that term of address that we've been talking about, beloved. But I want you to back up into verse 1. He begins the chapter like this. He says, see how great a love the Father has bestowed on us that we would be called children of God. What he's saying is, remember who you are. You're mine. You belong with me. That we would be called the children of God, and such we are. For this reason, the world does not know him. Because it did not know him. Beloved, now we are the children of God, and it has not appeared as yet what we will be. We know that when he appears, we will be like him, because we will see him just as he is. And everyone who has this hope fixed on him purifies himself just as he is pure. Now there's a textual difference here. Some translations may not use the phrase, and such we are. I think there's a simple explanation for it, but I do believe that it belongs here. And such we are, that we would be called the children of God, and such we are. It's not just that you've got that name. God doesn't just let you stay over at the house. He doesn't just feed you a meal occasionally. Did you ever have a neighbor kid that always wanted to come over, or maybe you were the neighbor kid, always wanted to stay at somebody else's house, go over for dinner? You don't get to just come over for dinner every once in a while. You don't just get to stay the night. You have sleepovers. And such we are. We are. We're not just called, but such we are. We are God's children. That's the way that John presents it. There's another passage that I'd like to look at for just a moment on this idea of belonging to the Lord. It's over in the book of Galatians. There's two places where this happens. In Galatians chapter 4, there's this odd term, there's this odd phrase that's used in reference to God. It's not a very big phrase, but it is kind of an odd one. And I think there's been some misunderstanding in the religious world as to what's being described here, what's being entailed here. When God is described here, our spirit cries out. This is Galatians chapter 4 and verse 6. Because you are sons. The very thing that John's talking about. That we would be called the children of God. See how great a love the Father has bestowed on us. We would be called the children of God, and such we are. We're not just called that, but we are. And so Paul's talking about this fact that we are sons. And then he says, and God has sent forth the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. Now, what does that mean, Abba? What does that mean? Well, that's a term that means Father. But think about this for a moment. If the term Abba means Father, then why does Paul immediately translate it with Father right after that. He's using. It's my understanding an Aramaic word, Abba. But then immediately after that, he translates it and says, Father. Why doesn't he just say Father? I mean, if we translated all of this into English, he would say that he sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts crying, Father, Father. Why does he go to the extent of using this word here? Now, some have suggested that this is the word that little babies, little toddlers, this is one of their, little babies learn dada and mama, this is their first words. And that this is that kind of language, that this is the language of a toddler when he looks up at his big and strong dad. I wouldn't disagree that that is what little kids call their dad, but I've called my dad, dad, for as long as I can remember. This is not the language simply of a toddler, though. Look at the context of Galatians. What is Paul doing here in this letter? I'll tell you what he's doing. He's making the case that we do not need Old Testament Judaism, works of the law. We're justified by faith, not by works of the law. That, I think, is what he's doing here in Galatians. And he's laid out several points. Now notice the point that he begins in chapter 4. He says, now I say, as long as the heir is a child. So he's going to make this contrast between a child and an adult. Which are we? As long as the heir is a child, he does not differ at all from a slave, although he is owner of everything. But he's under guardians and managers until the date set by the father. What date is that? Well, I don't know. Whenever your dad says so. You get to be a man when your dad says you're a man. Whenever the date set by your father. And then he goes on and says in verse 3, so also we, while we were children, were held under bondage, under the elemental things of the world. But when the fullness of time came, the date set by the father, God sent forth His Son, born of a woman, born under the law, so that He might redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons. And because we are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of His Son, Jesus, into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So again, this is not the language of a child, because we're not children anymore, we're full-grown adults. So why does he use this term, Abba? I'll tell you, I think this is a powerful point. When Jesus prayed, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. What is the word that Jesus used? He used Abba. I think the point that Paul is making is when he says, because you are sons, it's the same point that John's making here in 1 John chapter 3, that such we are. It's not just that you wear God's name, but you are His sons. Because you can use the same very word that Jesus used. It's not that you have to use this particular word. It's that you are God's people. Remember who you are. What does a good parent tell their children? They say, I tell my children, I say, now be nice. Did you folks ever tell you this? Be nice to your brother and sister. Be nice. Just be nice. I tell my kids that. Be nice to your brother and sister. I tell them sometimes, listen, be nice to them because someday they may be the only people you got to count on. Be nice to your brother and sister. I know you live next to it. You live with each other. You know, there's just going to be natural friction, but be nice to them because someday you might need them. I have two sisters and I have two brothers. My older sister is with me. We have a younger sister, and I'm not going to elaborate on this. I'm just going to set this up and I think it'll be enough. I have a younger sister. When we were children, we had this double-story house, and I happened to spy my younger sister outside of my window, my upstairs window, in fact. I happened to spy her outside the window, And not only did I have a younger sister, but I also had a slingshot. Just be nice. You can imagine what transpired. Be nice to your brothers and sisters. You know what? I've counted on her since we've matured, since we've grown up. I tell people sometimes, my younger brother, I don't know why Tony talks to us. I don't know if you've ever met Tony. But Kevin and I, we're close in age. We used to do all kinds of mean things to Tony. We'd tie him up and I for the life of me, do not know why he even talks to us anymore. I'm glad he does. Be nice to your brother and sister. Because there's going to come a day when they may be the only people that'll be there for you when you really need somebody. Be nice to your brother and sister. Look at what John has to say. John says again in chapter 3. This is 1 John again. 1 John chapter 3. And notice what he says in verse 18. Little children, again, there's that term of address, little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and in truth. Or over in chapter 4 in verse 7, he says, beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Or down in verse 11, beloved again, beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. Be nice to your brother and sister. Now, I know that when we think about that, we all think of ourselves. We all think of ourselves. We are loving. Even when I was a kid and I was shooting my sister or I was tying up my brother, I thought I was a nice brother. It was for their own good, if nothing else. I thought I was a nice brother. We all think of ourselves that way, that we are loving. We are compassionate. We are kind. We think of ourselves that way. And it's easy to continue thinking of ourselves that way when other people are nice too, right? Now, what he says back there in chapter 3, let us not, not love in word or with tongue, but in deed and truth. And the verse right before that in verse 17, he had said this again, 1 John chapter 3 and verse 17, but whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? It's easy to be loving when nobody needs anything from us. Right? It's easy to hug somebody that wants to be hugged. It's easy to say nice things to people that say nice things back. It'd be entirely different, though, to hug somebody that's prickly. It'd be entirely different to say something kind or soft to somebody that's wrathful and angry. But John doesn't say only hug the people that are huggable. Only be kind to those that are charitable themselves. Matter of fact, that passage over in Colossians about let your speech always be with grace. What's that mean? Let your speech always be with grace. You just have the most beautiful words. What does that mean? No, I think what it means is grace is giving people better than what they deserve. There are some people that deserve to really be told off. And what Paul's saying is, listen, give them better than what they deserve. They don't tell them off. Give them a kind word. Be nice to your brothers and sisters. We think about our parents. We think about our grandparents. When I first moved to Robinson, it was just shortly before my grandmother passed away. And I had an opportunity to go and stay with her, stay the night with her, and just watch over her. She had cancer, and she was only given a few weeks. And so I had an opportunity, and I was thankful for that. I was able to go and just stay with her that one evening. There are others that have taken care of their parents or their grandparents for years. I remember a young lady in Illinois, a place where I was preaching, that she would go to her grandparents, and her grandfather was in an assisted living place, and she would go every day at lunchtime to feed him. And of course, things happen as you age, and he was not able to simply chew food and swallow, and so she would spoon feed him, and sometimes the food would fall out, and just like a child, you'd scoop it back up and you'd continue to feed them. You know, I like the thought of that. I like the thought of being able to give back to my parents or my grandparents in that kind of loving way. And it's nice as long as Grandpa smiles and goes ahead and swallows the spoonful of food. But what if Grandpa decided to be a little bit cantankerous that day and spit the food at you? What would you do? What would you do? Well, that's Grandpa. I would like to think that I would just wipe it off and think, well, that's just Grandpa, and I love him, and I'm just going to continue to feed him, and I'll be back the next day to do the same thing again. I'd like to think that. Because I want to think of myself as loving. We want to think of ourselves as loving, and it's when everybody else is nice to us that it's so easy to think about. When they are prickly, what do we do with them then? I tell them, be nice to your brothers and sisters. I tell my kids, I say, now, remember what I've told you. Remember what I told you. Go back to chapter 2. Chapter 2 and verse 7. John says, beloved, there's that term of address, beloved, I'm not writing to you a new commandment, but an old commandment which you've had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word which you have heard. Now, I look at that passage and I think, okay, John, what are you talking about here? It's not a new commandment, but it's an old commandment. But it's an old commandment that's a new commandment. What? Make up your mind. Is it an old commandment or is it a new commandment? Which is it? He says it's not, but it is. Is it an old commandment or a new commandment? Well, it's both. I tell my children, remember what I told you. Did your folks ever say stuff like that to you? How many times do I have to tell you? Remember what I told you. I've already explained this to you. Has this moment ever happened for some of you that have had parents? Or I'm sorry, everybody has had parents. Some of you that have had children. Has this moment occurred when, and it's usually in a moment of great distress, it's a moment of great anxiety and frustration with your children and what they're doing, and that you have told them this 1,000,000,000 times before, and all of a sudden something comes out of your mouth, and it's even in a different voice, but something comes out of your mouth, and all of a sudden the light bulb goes off, and you realize, that's my dad. That's my dad. Or that's my mom. Those are the words of my dad. That's the words of, those are the very same things that I heard 1,000,000,000 times before. Has that ever happened? And you realize, I'm my dad. I mean, it happens to us, doesn't it? And you know why that happens? It's because all of that time it was being sown into our brain. It was being sown into our life. It had been sown into us. And there it grew. Until now, it's not my dad or my mom's words. When they come out of my mouth, those are my words. Those are my words now. That is what John is talking about here. He's saying, I'm not writing to you a new commandment. This is the same stuff you've heard over and over and over. This isn't a new message. This isn't a new gospel. It's the same stuff. But listen, when you do it, when you make it your faith, it's new with you. When I preach different places, I use different books and things, and there's a book that I've got at home that's got this little poem in it that I'd like to share with you, and I think it perfectly illustrates what we're talking about. It's written by this guy named Robert Fulham. And the title of the book, the title of the poem is, Everything That I Ever Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Can you believe that? You could have graduated at kindergarten and been done. Everything I really needed to know I learned in kindergarten. This is what he says. He says, all I really need to know about how to live and what to do and how to be, I learned in kindergarten. Wisdom was not at the top of the graduate school mountain, but there in the sand pile at Sunday school. There are the things, these are the things I learned. Share everything. Play fair. Don't hit people. Put things back where you found them. Clean up your own mess. Don't take things that aren't yours. Say you're sorry when you hurt somebody. Wash your hands before you eat. Flush. Warm cookies and cold milk are good for you. Live a balanced life. Learn some and think some and draw and paint and sing and dance and play and work every day some. Take a nap every afternoon. When you go out into the world, watch out for traffic, hold hands, and stick together. Now, I know you need to learn a little bit about reading and writing, a little bit of mathematics. But I'll tell you what, if people would learn this, we'd be a whole lot better off, right? Remember what I told you. I tell you, that's the way it is with Bible study. There are complicated things, yes. But really, the stuff you need to know, it's not new stuff. And it's not complicated stuff. Just remember what I told you. Let me move through these last two very quickly. I tell my children, I say, it's okay, I can take care of it. I can take care of it. That's what dads do, right? We fix bicycle tires, knotted shoelaces. We untie them. We fix things. That's what dads do. I've got a drawer at home of broken toys that I'm supposed to super glue. When I get some super glue, I'll take care of it. That's what we do. We fix things. It's a sad day when you come to realize that there are some things that you cannot fix. It's more of a frightening thing to dads and moms than it is to kids. The day that you realize that there are things that happen in your children's lives that I cannot fix. Notice what John says. John turns this around slightly. He says in chapter 2 in verse 1, he says, "Now my little children, I'm writing these things to you so that you may not sin. But if anyone sins, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous, and He is the propitiation for our sins, not for ours only, but also for those of the whole world." And what John's saying is, we can fix that. Now, John is not saying, I can fix that, but it can be fixed. There are things that even as a dad, I cannot fix. As much as I'd like to, I cannot make it better. I might be able to hold your hand and walk through it with you, but I cannot make it better. But it can be fixed. And that's the important point. One last. I tell my children, I love you. Good parents tell their children they love them, and they tell them that often, right? Notice with me, if you will, the letter at 1 John. Now notice what John's saying here with these terms of address. Chapter 2 and verse 7. Beloved. Or chapter 3 and verse 2. Beloved. Or verse 21. Beloved. Or chapter 4 and verse 1. Beloved, or verse 7, beloved, or verse 11, beloved. You know what he's saying? What he's saying is, I love you. You are loved. And he says that over and over and over again and again. I love you. You know, it was the last thing I said to my mom before she died. She called the day before she passed away. She didn't know she was going to. Day before she passed away, she called me on the phone. And the last thing that we said before we hung up was, I love you. And when I was writing this sermon, my dad and I had talked the day before. And you know, the last thing that we had said, I love you. Just in case these are the last things that ever pass between us, I want you to know, I love you. And I tell my children that when they wake up and when they go to bed at night. I try to remember to tell them throughout the day, I love you.
just in case these are the last words that they hear from my lips, I want them to know, I don't want them to have any doubt or ever question that I did love them. What does a good parent tell their children? They tell them about their love. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with you this week. I love you. I appreciate all that you do. My dad says good things about you. I know he's happy to be here with you and worship with you. I love you. I'm thankful for you. May God bless you. Thank you.